home to mama, cause she wanna stay in papa. Should've thought about that before you came to me.
I'm gonna mute my telephone. Aren't we recording my album? We're recording. Okay, fantastic. Okay, well, hello everyone, and welcome to Right Back Atcha, the Naughties Pop Music Podcast with myself, Joel Babington, and my wonderful host, David Lim.
That is such a professional intro.
I've been thinking about it, and I think we need it. I went for it without telling you.
I love that. Just take control, own the moment. And what, this is our 15th episode and you just thought, now's the time. Because there's only so much of, hello, David, how are you?
No, I'm naturally letting it segue into that now. So, hello, David, how are you?
No, it's been really good. Lots has happened since our last recording. Oh,
it feels like we haven't recorded in about a year.
I know. Life hits you fast.
Mm. I'm a year older since our last episode.
Yes. It's been very exciting.
Very busy. Had my birthday celebrations. We went to go and see Liberty X at the Clapham Grand, didn't we? We had so much fun.
Joel, I mean, thank you for that deluxe experience where we got to watch it from a box.
Yeah, thank you to the Clapham Grand for a lovely box and lovely bar tab. Had the most wonderful night. Our box, we were basically part of Liberty X. We were right on top of them.
We were the two boys.
And we brought some dancers with us as well. Yeah. And I don't know about you, but it felt like they were either loving it because we were going crazy, or sometimes they'd look up to us and go point to our box and stuff. But if one of us was on our phones and we weren't quite looking at them, they'd awkwardly look away.
Oh, yeah. It was way too, like, naked and close.
It was wonderfully naked and close. Intimate and exciting, just how I like it.
Also, another thing that's happened since our last recording, and Joel, you and I have not actually spoken about this, but Louise has released a comeback single.
Oh, Stretch.
Stretch, which I tweeted is sort of like Kylie's Sexercise, but on a yoga retreat. And yeah, that tweet went semi-viral, as in it got 30 likes, which is more than most of my tweets.
Which is why he's been so unavailable to record recently. It's Louise's physical, you know. It's a gorgeous, mature lady's sophisticated physical of 2019.
I think if you only know Louise for Naked, you listen to Stretch, you're like, oh yeah, that's the same lady.
Natural,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Still sexy, but now she needs to stretch before she gets into it.
You should do anyway. It's very important.
Always stretch before you reach.
She's going on tour in March next year.
Now, Joel, you've seen her twice already in the last 12 months, right?
The first solo gig in 15 plus years that we went to, then Brighton Pride and Mighty Hoopla.
Oh yeah, I didn't know she played Brighton Pride.
But I also saw her in the Strictly tour, and I saw her in Cabaret as well. And she's currently in 9 to 5, which I need to get myself to.
Oh, that looks fantastic. Yeah. Also, we have to quickly mention our solo Spice Girls episode is now officially our most listened to episode.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love for everyone to guess what the original front runner was, but I'll let you know. It was Stacey Orico and JoJo.
Thank you to the fan accounts when we release our episodes that really do help spread the word of our podcast. You know, Pussycat Doll fans,
oh, yes,
JoJo fans, really help to spread the word on our respective episodes on them. And it helps us so much. And we love interacting with you guys. Mm-hmm. And also just the bunch of Y2K accounts. Mm-hmm. It's so lovely interacting with you and just sharing our love of this era together.
Absolutely. So if you're on socials, hit us up. We're at Right Back Pod. And while we're talking about solo Spice Girls, of course, Emma Bunton released her first solo album in, 12 years? My Happy Place.
My Happy Place.
I mean, the highlight for me was her cover of Madison Avenue's Don't Call Me Baby.
Because we kind of joked, or you joked, like, oh, will it be a cover of that? And it was.
And it turned out,
great.
She really went there. She really did this. So I'm all here for an Ibiza chill Emma Bunton album, should she ever want to make one. You know, lo-fi house beats, kind of bossa nova-y vibe, some Spanish guitars, her chilled vocals. Here for it. Emma,
I'm really hoping she does a mini tour of the back of this album after, you know, the big reunion tour. Do I look sunburnt to you, David?
No.
Oh, I'm very sunburnt. Maybe David just can't pick that up on his...
But, you know, I have very sympathetic lighting in this room.
Thank God.
I couldn't, you know, do with abusive lighting, that's for sure.
I'm going to need to make sure I do a nice, nourishing face mask after this, because I'm going to get new passport photos taken tomorrow.
Oh, shit. Mm. Okay. Did you see I shared that clip from Victoria Beckham's reality show where she was at the DMV?
Oh,
getting a photo taken.
That's excellent. That's going to be me tomorrow.
Yeah. Do we get approval? Oh, you mean you don't retouch?
So, let's get into it in our Naughties Pop Music podcast. So, before David spills who they are, I'm just going to apologise because last episode I did tease of who we were going to be covering in our next episode. And it was going to be a journey I was really excited to lock David down to. And that is still happening, guys, but that isn't this episode. It's probably going to be the next episode.
Yeah, it will be the next one, yeah.
For this episode, I am kind of here, tied up, locked down, against my will. Who are we doing today, David?
Today's special episode is in celebration of Pink. Whether you knew the first album, the R&B Pink album, or you knew her from Get the Party Started onwards, we're going to keep you covered on those two albums and those eras.
But we're not just doing Pink today, are we, David?
No. I mean, this whole thing is pretty much just a very self-indulgent way of me wanting to talk about one of my favourite artists of the noughties, Vitamin C.
If there's any people that really listen to our podcast, in series one, I said to David, stop trying to make Vitamin C happen. And he still is. I don't know if I'm meant to be saying vitamin C or vitamin C.
Saying whatever way that's organic and natural to you.
Maybe I'll just keep it as VC.
The VC. A bit of a tenuous connection between these two ladies. There was, once upon a time, and thank God for Google, a Teen People cover featuring the new generation of talent. We had Beyoncé in the middle.
Must have some sort of new artist that must have never taken off.
Yeah, I mean, sad, whatever happened to this young lady. I know,
maybe we'll cover her one day, we'll dig into it. Maybe she's like Ellie Campbell or something, of America.
So we have Beyoncé in the middle. To the left, we have the VC, Vitamin C, and then Pink on the other side. I think no one told Beyoncé.
Is this not a solo shoot?
You can see by the look on her face, she's like, I'm going to have to stand here with two other ladies again.
Again, and their shoulders are in front of me. This is outrageous. Yeah. I mean, what an iconic snapshot in time.
What a time to be alive. I mean, if you're Vitamin C, would you not hang this up in your toilet?
Darling, that would be hung up in every single room.
I mean, Beyoncé and Pink would go on and do the Pepsi commercial with Britney and Enrique Iglesias, but, you know, VC didn't get the call.
Do you think they thought of her initially? And they thought, well, we'll have to get someone in. Britney Spears, is she available?
Yeah, it's only because VC wasn't.
Yeah,
that they got,
turned it down.
Yeah, Britney stepped in. So that's our very tenuous link between these two ladies, but we're going to take you through the timeline, which obviously, for Vitamin C's project and Pink's, they do kind of overlap in a very cohesive way as well. So we have Alicia Moore, aka Pink, who was 21 when she debuted. There she was, Pop's wild child. And then we have Colleen Ann Fitzpatrick.
Another Ann.
She is another Ann.
The Ann Hall of Fame.
Who else was it? Jessica Ann.
Jessica Ann. Simpson. Vanessa Ann.
Vanessa Ann Hudgens.
And I think there was someone else, but I can't remember
Not
now.
Mandy Ann.
No.
So Colleen Ann Fitzpatrick, by the time she debuted as a solo artist, she was already 27. So, you know, in my mind, we've got Pop's wild child, Pink, and we've got teen pop's big sister, Vitamin C. That's sort of how I'm seeing it.
And VC was in a band, wasn't she, before she was a soloist?
Oh, God, yeah.
She, unlike a lot of her contemporaries, you know, the Britney, Christina, Mandy, Jessica, Pink, Willa, VC went from kind of edgy band to, like, sugary pop, where people kind of normally do that the other way around.
Yeah,
but she went for it.
She went for it. So it all started a little bit before the rock band that she was with called Eve's Plum. She got Colleen got her big break when she was 16 and cast as Amber Von Tussle in John Waters' Hairspray.
Now that is an iconic role.
And you're a film buff, so you know how significant this is.
Yeah, not to be confused with the musical Hairspray, guys. This is the original film that the musical was based off of. Mm-hmm. And Amber von Tussle is like the sort of queen bee.
Debbie Harry of Blondie was also in it.
Oh, yeah.
And she plays the VC's mum. Now, we're going to see a lot of Debbie Harry and Vitamin C kind of connection because it's very clear that Debbie Harry is a huge idol of the VCs. And, you know, we're going to see that connection towards the end of her VC solo career
what
as well.
Bookends from the very beginning and then at the very
last
end.
Single. Yeah. So this is a real thread that we're going to see through this journey. So after she, you know, had that really iconic film debut with Hairspray, she went to NYU. So the year was 1991. She met a guy called Michael Koch and they formed an alternative rock band called Eve's Plum. But really, it wouldn't go on to find very much success. So the band, sadly, was dropped. The funny thing is, the guy she formed the band with, Michael Koch, ends up becoming the VC's husband. They do get married many, many years later. So
that's so sweet.
It's quite a sweet story there. So 1998, it was time for young Colleen Ann to reassess.
She got some hair dye. She took some supplements and thought, hang on a minute, I like that catchy name. I'm going to stick with it.
Vitamin C, yes.
That's a bit of me, that.
So she started working on a solo project when the band faded and she was experimenting with a more dance pop sound and she shopped it around and eventually Elektra Records picked her up.
How all the big record labels were having their version of Britney.
Yeah.
Even the alternative labels were getting in on that.
Exactly, yeah. So Vitamin C's debut solo single, Smile, featuring Lady Saw, came out in June of 1999. This is a very cheerful Disney pop reggae style record.
Yeah,
isn't
very
it?
Interesting. What I do like about the music video is that I like that it's set in a record store and they're dancing in it. I can't place anyone doing that, considering that is the of that era in time. Mm. That's the holy grail, isn't it?
And we're not talking record store. We're talking CD shop.
Big CD shop,
like a Virgin Megastore.
The Virgin Megastore of our dreams, basically. And they've made a cool music video in it, and I think that's a great concept for a music video. I do think it's quite interesting that she's, for her debut single, got sort of pop and then mixed in the reggae aspect. It's a smidge jarring for me, but it's an interesting choice.
Having had all these years to reflect on Smile, now I look back, I was like, this actually feels like a children's record.
The whole thing about Vitamin C, it all sounds like children's music. Like, do you know what I mean? And I don't mean that negatively. Spoilers. It makes sense that she kind of has her job at Nickelodeon now.
Mm. It seems like she understood how to market to children. But actually, if you look at her demeanor in a music video, she actually isn't that smiley, is she? She's like a friend of your brother's or something.
Yeah.
Like really cool. You know, she might come over when your brother's around and wouldn't really talk to you.
Her kind of vibe and sort of musical style is a little bit of a strange enigma in this pop princess overflow.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it quite fascinating in a way.
Mm.
Vitamin C, and I think because of that name Vitamin C as well, and the tone of her voice and then the music, it does also all sort of sound like the music of like a computer game character. Do you know what I mean? What I think's interesting about VC, and obviously I don't know what's her opinion or going on in her mind, it seems very manufactured, but in a way of she's quite happy with it. She's not...
it's very knowing.
Very knowing and very sort of, if not in control, in agreement.
Yeah. Going into this as a sort of, hey, if I can get away with this, then
great. Opportunity.
Yeah. And great opportunity it was. So Smile peaked at number 18 on the US Billboard Hot 100, certifying gold, selling 500,000 copies. It made top 30 in Canada, number 13 in New Zealand. Didn't quite catch on in Australia, where it made 138 on the charts.
Mm.
But New Zealand is just...
they're knowing.
I think
we need to go and tour New Zealand.
We need to check our analytics and see how big our audience is in New Zealand.
Because I wonder what... or we need to start doing paid promo for our podcast to target New Zealand
audiences.
Imagine
if we break in New Zealand first.
I'm moving there.
Do you ever search like Vibrancy fan club websites and stuff just to see what's out there?
No.
Because we found one from New Zealand the other day. It was hysterical.
Really?
You took a picture of this very nice, dorky-looking man from New Zealand.
Oh, cool.
But he took a roll of pictures of you performing. Must have been, I can't tell where it was.
I've heard about those photos, actually.
They're good photos, I thought. He didn't think so. But
yeah,
I thought they were...
someone else I knew didn't think so either.
They were pretty good, but anyway.
My friend called and said, you look really fat in these photos.
So let's take a quick look at Vitamin C's debut album, just called Vitamin C, which came out in August 1999. Now, I had this album on cassette.
On cassette.
And this was actually quite a few years after everyone had moved on to CDs.
Oh, that's sweet, though. I had some cassettes like that.
It was just like, I think I was in a 7-Eleven or something on a school trip. So somewhere near the counter, they had cassettes going, and it was The Corr's Greatest Hits and Vitamin C's first album. I just grabbed
it. You got The Corr's Greatest Hits as well. Yeah. How much money did you have on this school trip, David? Bloody hell. So what's really interesting is that you would have gone into the album knowing the second album,
mm-hmm.
first and foremost,
yeah.
loving that second album. Already being so much of a fan in that, how was that for you to listen to this album for the first time?
Because I never really understood how she was part of like an alternative rock band before she became Vitamin C.
Mm.
And then hearing this debut album, I was like, okay, I can hear lots of guitars and quite kind of... it made more sense listening to it as part of the journey. I was like, okay, she's experimenting.
Mm.
She's coming out of her shell, but she still doesn't want to lose that edge.
Yeah, Turn Me On is a really ballsy second track.
Oh, yeah. You go from Smile.
For a song that ends on Smile and ends on Graduation, Friends Forever, for track two to be Turn Me On, you're like, okay, VC... All her songs are a bit like, I'm talking now.
I'm too cool for school.
I'm gonna talk again. I don't know why, but I'll talk some more. Bum! Da 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 da! Sing the chorus, and it's the same lines again and again. I'll talk again. I went to the shops. But this album...
It's eclectic, but not like in a Funky Dory way.
No. It has some moments.
Like, I mean, there are themes about sex, there are themes about feminism.
Yeah, Turn Me On.
Gun violence was referenced in one of the tracks.
What song was that?
Girls Against Boys, which talks about reversing the gender roles. There's a line in there that says, imagine a world where the girls run the show. Imagine a world where the boys were told no. Would there be peace on earth? No more guns? Question mark.
She dropped the mic with that one. Unhappy Anniversary.
Oh my god.
I've put in my notes, that's the first song on the album that I think is okay.
That's one that I still listen to so
that's
much.
That's very you, that kind of song.
When you're sad on your birthday and you just want some alone time, that is...
fuck off everyone.
That song's a major mood. It's time to escape you. The Vitamin C album wasn't an immediate success. It reached its peak of number 29 on the Billboard 200 10 months after it came out.
Wow.
I think what it was is basically no one took notice of the album when it came out.
Mm.
And then she had Graduation, Friends Forever. And then that fucking changed
everything. That was kind of her hole again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is... you know, a lot of people will say that Vitamin C is a one-hit wonder. Because of that. November 1999, we get the second single from the VC, and it's Me, Myself, and I. Now, I sent you the link to a performance of this.
Yes, you did, on The Amanda Show. And thank you so much for sending me that, because I went into a real Amanda Show internet black hole that night. Because I love Amanda Bynes. I think it's so sad, kind of, the few bad years she had. And again, how did we not learn from how we've treated celebrities in the past to just do it again in more recent times? I really like to think and hope, especially in the past few years, the conversation around mental health is taking, if not taken, us away from that.
Yeah.
But so VC went on The Amanda Show to promote this song. That choreography is terrible in that performance.
I mean,
really bad. It's... The people in the YouTube comments are talking about how bad it is.
Yeah, I don't think anyone can really say that dancing is vitamin C's strong suit.
But even, I'm not slagging off VC, the choreography is bad. That is like corner work we used to do at college. That is like exercises, not what you do for your final number.
So the music video for Me, Myself and I was shot out in the desert. You know, you've got Vitamin C there with her gang of girls blowing up her boyfriend's car. It's all very dramatic. The video is directed by Nigel Dick.
And you can tell it is a fantastic music video. I'll give her that. You don't really see that much of the movement in the music video.
Oh, no, this is not like a dance video. There are elements of choreography, but there's so much more narrative and hijinks happening.
Johnny Knoxville also features in the music video.
Now, that's a name no one's heard since, you know, 2000. Yeah.
This is probably the most cinematic music video I would say she does.
I'm like, as a lifelong Vitamin C fan who has literally not ever been able to talk to anyone about any of her work, for you to even say that and validate that with that line is just like so much for me.
Oh yeah, he really, like the song's really elevated. That's a great moment for her.
What do you think of the track? Video.
Makes me feel like I'm at a cafe or something. I don't know why, but like...
I thought it was a lot of fun. I love that it was just so sassy, so full of attitude, putting boys in their place.
Yeah, I like that aspect of it. And so the song contains a sample from the Santana song, No One to Depend On. I'm not aware of that band or song, but...
You're not aware of Santana?
No.
Oh.
What is a Santana?
I'll tell you later.
Okay.
So Me, Myself and I made number 20 on the Billboard bubbling under Hot 100 singles. It never quite made the Hot 100, sadly. Number 36 on the Billboard Top 40 Mainstream.
Chart. Fabulous.
Yeah. And also in the same month, Pokemon, the first movie soundtrack, was released and Vitamin C had a track on it called Vacation.
Yes, I listened to that today. It's so sweet. Now, that song, I believe, was used in Pikachu's Vacation, which is the short that plays before Pokemon the movie.
Next comes, now this is where it really breaks her motherfucking career. January 2000, Graduation, Friends Forever. And this is how it feels.
Now, thank God she wrote on this because she's probably still getting a nice, healthy paycheck for this song now.
Every end of school year,
basically. End of school year.
If Mariah has Christmas, Vitamin C has the end of school year.
What's like the untapped thing that we can write a single for?
Maybe we need to make like the start of British summertime, BST, the changing of clocks, like a real event.
And do a big bop for that.
Yeah, big bop for that. Like something about stepping ahead in time or stepping back in time.
Yeah, but we could have it talk about two things. It can talk about the beginning of the summer and the end of the summer, so it can have a double life.
Oh yeah, double A side. Oh my God. Nobody steal this idea. So, Graduation, Friends Forever. Now, this is the signature hit for the VC.
The signature hit.
A real pop culture moment. I can't really listen to this song, Joel, because it still gets me so sentimental.
Really? So even at your school, they played this when you graduated?
Yeah, well, I graduated from primary school a year before this, actually.
Yeah.
So I missed out on it. I remember being so upset because I was in my first year of high school and then this song broke. It broke in Australia a little bit later, actually, yeah. In the year 2000. So I missed it completely. I was so jealous of the kids in a year below me because they got to have it as their graduation song. Ours was fucking Smash Mouth, All Star.
Hey, now you're an All Star.
Yeah, that was our song.
Apparently, in the States, it's every time, every high school and some middle school graduations, it's very well known to be played, and it will kind of re-enter the charts every year. And the reason I know it, or I even know who Vitamin C is because there's a scene in Scary Movie 2. I found this scene so funny and related to it so much and still do now, because she's driving in the... Anna Faris is driving in the car by herself, singing along to this song so loudly and terribly.
Oh, this is very Joel. Very not badly, me. Not singing badly, though.
Yeah. But just singing loudly.
Yeah.
And then she just... Then Vitamin C herself, it is her doing an audio cameo.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was a made-up song for the movie.
Oh my God, bless. We've talked about how much we love a high school set music video in Y2K era. And this has it all. You know, we've got the jocks, we've got the nerds, we've got the cheerleaders. It's all very, I mean, obviously it's a graduation song, but it's all very emotional.
So dramatic. While, like, the violins or whatever playing, she's running around and VC's just posing. I love it. There's one literally in the shoulder and the head. And it's just different poses while this girl runs around trying to find a boy. VC, model, hit it. The girl's running and running and running.
So, I mean, this was a real commercial success of Vitamin C, but yeah. It was a real slow burner as well. So in the US, it reached the peak of number 38 on the Billboard Hot 100 after 9 weeks, wow. Making this Vitamin C's second top 40 hit. Number 4 in Ireland.
Number 4 in Ireland and no charting here. Yeah, I don't just know didn't how cross over happened. Here.
How did you guys get so lucky in Ireland to get...
Any of our Irish listeners, actually, please do let us know if you're familiar with the song when it got released. How you heard about it. Do you know what could have been funny or interesting is if regionally around the world we'd seen singers cover this for their country.
Oh.
Wouldn't that have been an interesting concept?
That would have been a way in for the record. So Graduation Friends Forever was released in September 2000 in Australia. So towards the end of our school year before we break for summer. And I mean, that was by far the biggest charting success and biggest market for the record. It reached number 2 in Australia, certifying platinum, spent 9 weeks in the top 10, overall 20 weeks on our singles chart.
Wow.
And at the year-end chart, it was number 13. So Vitamin C did come out to Australia to promote it and perform.
Yeah.
And she performed with a local school choir.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, bring West them on Life stage. Yeah, I think it's a really good idea. And I think she does this a lot at different regional places or whatever that she performs in. She invites the local school choir on stage and... Yeah. Now, there is a student mix version of this single that has clips of kids talking about graduation edited in, as if it wasn't sentimental enough already. 15 years after its release, Radio Disney did a new edit of Graduation, and it found, like, new kids.
With a new singer?
With new interview bits edited in.
Oh, okay, but still VC's vocal.
Oh, still VC. She's not letting that up.
No.
So before we leave Vitamin C in this hot minute in the year 2000... Very interesting to note, at this point in her career, Mattel released a Vitamin C doll.
Yes, they did. I was going to ask you if you saw about that. Did you see the pictures? It looks like a really cute doll.
Yeah.
How did they decide to have a Vitamin C doll?
You know, Mattel asked me, and when you're asked, you have to say yes.
You have to say yes.
But I have some anatomical improvements, you'll notice, in my doll.
Can I take it out?
Yeah, please do. But you'll notice I have a belly button.
You have a belly button. Mm-hmm. A lot of dolls don't.
Don't have belly buttons.
Okay.
And I have hair.
Hair extensions.
Hair extensions, hair pieces that you can add because I'm always changing my
Very
hair color.
Very popular here in L.A., the hair extensions.
And I have bigger boobs than I normally do.
You have...
Much larger boobs than I normally do.
Crazy to think that she was big enough for that.
I mean, hats off to whoever was looking after her brand partnerships, if brand partnerships was even a role back then.
And then also, like, while... parents are probably even just familiar with the name, that will help them be like, oh yeah, I'll get that for my kid. I think they've spoken about her.
Yeah, I mean,
looks, get it out while it's a buzzy name.
Exactly,
know?
Yeah.
So, well done, Colleen.
Also in the year 2000, Tommy Hilfiger released a lipstick colour after Vitamin C's name.
Wow.
Shook. For the most part of 2000, while Friends Forever graduation was, you know, gaining momentum around different parts of the world, Vitamin C went back and did some acting, and she starred in Dracula 2000, which will come up at the end of the year, but we can get into that a little bit later. Now we're getting to a big part of our episode. Here we have 21-year-old pop star with an attitude, Pink. Who's this girl? Funky, bright pink hair with a really soulful voice. She's been performing since she was 9.
Yeah, I know, mental, isn't it?
Yeah, so, you know, this, it didn't happen overnight with her, and she didn't necessarily have the kind of TV breaks with the Mickey Mouse Club like some of her other peers, you know, so she really came up in a more, like, real hustle kind of way behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah.
She was a lead singer of a rock band at a really young age. I think she was like maybe about 13 at the time. And she started running with a really bad crowd and was doing drugs at that age.
I couldn't
believe
that when I found all that out. Like, remember, really bad.
Yeah. So we watched a little bit of Pink's Behind the Music documentary. 13, 14.
And the way she's talking about, like, smoking at 9, weed at 11, all kind of other drugs at 13. It's like, fucking hell, Pink.
Which kind of... You know, I've seen some interviews throughout her career where she's like, oh, I got all the drugs out of the way before I became famous. I was like, when?
Really? Yeah.
Like, now you know.
Now you know. Are you using both your pillows?
I'm using one. You can use that.
Thank you.
So, at 15, Pink smuggled herself into a Philadelphia nightclub with a fake ID. And somehow she got a chance to sing on a track that the DJ was playing. And the DJ was like, oh, you can really sing. You need to come back.
When you're not on drugs. And when you're not on drugs. Me over a yawn.
So that was what prompted her to sober up, because she had this opportunity to, you know, do something with her singing from there. She was in two different girl groups before she went solo. One was called Basic Instinct. The other was called Choice, and it was an R&B trio. They caught the attention of L.A. Reid, who signed them. Sadly, the album never came out. It just kept getting delayed. But they did have one single called Key to My Heart.
And that was on a soundtrack to something, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a soundtrack to... on a Shaquille O'Neal comedy movie or something. Right. But that song is not very good.
No.
So, it gets to 1998. Sort of similar to the VC's career. She's part of a band. Pink's part of a girl group. Both of them, their groups get dropped.
L.A. Reid gave her an ultimatum that you either leave the band and go out on your own or...
Go home.
Go home. That's the end. So and she found that really hard.
Yeah.
She was really close friends with these girls.
Mm. And by this stage, they've been together, what, 3 years or something? So yeah. It's just...
You know what? You stick with your friends, but you're going to lose anyway.
But... That was where Pink was born. There you go, looking pitiful. Just because I let you go, there you go. Talking about you want me back, but sometimes it feels like that. So there you go, talking about you miss me so that you love me, so I let you go. There you go, cause your life's not over. There you go. Please don't come around talking about how you changed, how you said goodbye to what's your name. So February 2000, the debut single for Pink, There You Go.
Mm. Pink was a big deal here in this album and this era. They charted really well here. I wasn't aware of her until Get This Party Started.
Oh.
Yeah, but I think this is a great debut single.
Mm. Pink wrote There You Go with Candy Burruss from Real Housewives of Atlanta. I mean, that's what Candy's known as now to the masses. But, you know, Candy is like a Grammy-winning songwriter. She wrote No Scrubs for TLC.
Wow.
She wrote Bills, Bills, Bills for Destiny's Child. So she really had that sound down.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the reason why, you know, I think if you listen to There You Go and you listen to Bills, 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 like, they do quite fit in quite well.
Mm.
So, you know, the music video, I mean... They really threw everything at it, didn't they? The fucking motorcycle flying across the building and into her boyfriend's apartment. That is just...
Mental.
Absolute mental. But they, you know, they kind of want to paint this image of a real misfit.
Feisty. Your new favourite feisty R&B girl.
Yeah. You know, because you've got Britney, Christina out there. Oh, was Christina started at this point?
Yeah, Christina must have started. Yeah, this is February 20, 2000.
Yeah.
All the girls would be out, even Mandy and Jess.
Yeah, so, you know, they've got very distinct images out there. And Pink was sort of like the edgier R&B antithesis for those girls, right?
My thing is, I write my music. I am a hands-on person. I make what this is. You know what I mean? Nobody came to me and said, okay, we're going to call you Pink here. Throw on some pink hair, get some pink shirts, and here you go, just be you. No, this is me. This is who I am. My music, I don't try to be candy-coated. I don't try to walk on eggshells. I am what I am. Because I was signed in 96 when there was no Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera and Mandy Moore and Jessica Simpson and whatever, whatever. So it was like they didn't know what to think of me. They were like, well, what's this girl? Like, she's punk rocker thug type, like, what is she? I'm like, whatever, like, I'm a mutt. We all are. We all came from the same place, God, and that's how I explain it. We're all pink on the inside, whatever you want to call it. I don't care. If you respect me, I respect you, and if you're ignorant, then I don't have anything to do with you, basically. I mean, a lot of people come to me, they're like, they've heard the song on the radio first, and they're like, she's not white, but people need to realize you don't have to be anything to be anything. You just, it comes from your experiences, it comes from where you've been, what you've been taught, and what you've decided to go with and learn.
So There You Go made number 7 on the US Billboard Hot 100, certifying gold. It became the 16th best-selling single of that year in the United States, number 6 in the UK, number 2 in Australia. This is her debut.
I know. And number 2 on our UK R&B charts as well.
Big deal. I have to say, listening to, because I hadn't heard There You Go in such a long time, there's something a little Mutia Buena about this.
Oh. Do you know what? They've kind of got similar vocal qualities when you think about it. But like when they kind of like, not push it, but like go somewhere with their vocal, they've got quite similar qualities about it.
It's the raspy soulfulness.
Yeah.
There's a honeyed kind of softness to it. I heard a little bit of Mutia on this. I'm not going to lie. Now I can't unhear it. Like, I need a Mutia Buena Y2K R&B album.
Mutia should like add a medley of these songs in her piece.
Yes. Yes. Oh my God. Mutia Buena does R&B Pink.
Yeah.
At the Boerdale Canary Wharf.
Let's get Mutia at the Clapham Grand.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Oh my God.
Okay, so following her incredibly, hugely successful debut single, Pink releases her debut album, Can't Take Me Home.
Wow, what a slick
debut album.
Very slick.
Just turned 19 this year. Amazing. April the 4th, it was released in the States.
Amazing. 19 years old, this album. Like, it's just... And, you know, you look at where Pink's at in her career now. You know, she's going from strength to strength. She has a new album coming out at the end of this month. I don't know album number what this is, but she's never stopped. Now, she was giving you lots of attitude on this album, isn't she?
Oh, yeah. I think it's actually been really nice for me to discover this album for the first time ever.
Mm.
And listen to it.
Yeah.
And enjoy it.
You know, she had some incredibly big names working on this album with her. She had Babyface, Candy, as we said, Tricky Stewart, who's worked with Maya, Soul Shock and Carlin, who does Whitney Houston, Toni Braxton, Victoria Beckham's debut album. This is a big flex. Like, this is LA Reid saying, look, I can pull in the big boys for this project.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to launch My Girl Pink. Now, highlights in terms of album tracks, because we'll get into the singles, obviously. Hell Witcher. The Pizza Hut lyrical reference.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that time we went to Pizza Hut and you told me she was your cousin.
Oh, we've all been there. This would have... Imagine this as the Mel B debut. Wow. I remember that girl in Pizza Hut. She said you were your cousin. I don't know where that accent went, cousin. She said you were... No, I can't do the accents all the time. Yeah, I mean, this is like a David Lynn body of work.
If I did a Y2K pop R&B album, this would be it.
It's made and served for you.
Yeah, no, very much so.
But I just love the holy trinity of singles on this. They kind of, for me as well, they could all be the same song, but that isn't a bad thing, because they're all great.
I mean, it is... I didn't notice this about the album. It is a little bit samey.
Yeah.
You know, it almost feels like we're trying to create this persona of who Pink is, and we're going to give it to you 9 tracks in a row. The album Can't Take Me Home made number 26 on the Billboard 200 in America. Sold more than 2 million copies, double platinum.
Wow.
Number 13 in the UK, certified platinum as well. In Australia, number 10, double platinum. Now, every album that Pink's had has gone top 10 in Australia, except for Misunderstood. I know.
What the hell were they thinking?
Overall, in terms of sales, that is the biggest seller, even though it didn't chart in the top 10.
Yeah,
It stuck around. Yeah, that's
the longevity.
Yeah, that's the most important thing. Now, shall we get into the next single? September 2000, Most Girls.
I think this is my favourite out of these 3 singles.
Same.
You sent me a link to the AMA's performance of this song, which I'd already seen years ago on one night of a YouTube dark hole. So it was very interesting to see such even early on in her career. You know, Pink is known for her kind of, not rivalries, but dislike of the Britney, Mandy, Jessica archetype that she doesn't want to be pigeonholed with. Mm-hmm. But I never thought it would have been this early on. So she does a real dig of Britney, Christina and Jessica at the beginning of this performance. And it's a bit savage. It comes up with flashes of all these different girls. It's like a big production number.
Almost looks like a musical number.
Yeah, it does, definitely. Saying all these different things. How will I get a guy to like me? Blah, blah, blah. By doing all these different things, I think. And then it comes up with these 3 girls who... hugely reminiscent of Britney, Christina,
and Jessica. I mean, it was
Britney
in the Baby One More Time outfit, basically.
Yeah.
This girl dressed up as
And Christina
that.
In Come On Over.
Yeah,
and Jessica in I Want to Love You Forever / I Think I'm In Love With You. It was really funny that the person doing the Jessica as well had the sort of mannerisms down to a T, even though it's not for another few years that we've got this dumb blonde archetype that Jessica has from the Newlyweds era.
Love that you picked up on the mannerisms, and this is like a 0.05 second flash.
Yeah. And then their line is, what do we do to make more serious music, or something like that.
Oh, to get more credibility.
To get more credibility. Bit savage, but
got
go
the attention,
for it.
Got the headlines.
Go for it, you know. Because I liked Pink's intention, but... And you got to give her credit for singing live, doing choreography, big staging. Mm-hmm. She probably couldn't hear herself that well or something because it wasn't the best vocal. I'm wondering if that was the same year Jessica performed at the AMAs.
Oh, shade.
No, 2001. So it's the same year. And Jessica slays her vocal. Maybe she even saw that and thought, fuck this bitch, I'm going to show her. So yeah, she did I Want to Love You Forever live there and slayed that vocal.
But you know, I mean, this isn't like a defining Pink performance, but it was something that needed to be referenced in especially circa Most Girls and the kind of rivalries that we see that kind of follow Pink's career, especially in this part.
This song was a bona fide hit. What a great follow-up.
Most Girls made a number 4 on the US Billboard Hot 100, number 1 on the Rhythmic charts, number 5 in the UK, number 1 in Australia, her first number 1 hit. Certified Platinum made number 15 on the year-end charts. I still live for it. We're getting to the next single. in December 2000, You Make Me Sick.
I know it.
You make me sick.
I love that we're in December. Everyone's sort of, you know, maybe toning it down, softening it with a ballad because Christmas is coming up. Nope. Pink is still going out there, coming after you.
Oh, yeah. She is not letting you sleep or nothing.
No. Now, this music video was a lot of fun. So it's the third Dave Myers video that she's done in this era. And it just shows her and her boyfriend having a very hot and cold relationship, making out 1 minute, and the next minute having a fight in the middle of a shopping mall.
Oh, yeah.
She throws a chicken at him.
Oh! Sorry for such a tangent, but you've seen that Keely Williams has brought up all this 3LW stuff again.
Speaking of throwing chickens and 3LW, what's happened?
Keely's now started posting Instagram videos atting Naturi, being like, why did you need to talk about this again on something? It was however many years ago, haven't we gone past it? But it's like, did our podcast episode restir these things? Are we the culprits?
Yikes. I mean, you did at Keely in a lot of our posts, didn't you?
I at them all, yeah, of course.
Of course, we want to get noticed.
Queen Adrienne liked one of our posts.
Anyway, back to throwing chicken.
You make me sick. Absolute motherfucking bop.
I mean, I'm feeling all these, like, attitude and angst, you know, at the time of these singles coming out, and I don't even have a boyfriend or even understand. I was just like, I just want to be mad at something. You know? It's like all these sassy R&B songs. You know, like, No Scrubs was out around this time. I was like...
I feel that.
He's like, I probably am a scrub. Yes. Yes, I do still ride on the passenger side.
Because my mum and dad drive.
Yeah. You Make Me Sick sadly wasn't as big a hit in the US, number 33 on the Hot 100. But, you know, it was December. Third single, it was December, it's almost Christmas. No one wants to get this angry. In the UK, number 9, so another top 10 hit for her. Number 25 in Australia, so I guess we maybe have moved on a little. Before the end of 2000 for Pink, let's just say she won the Billboard Music Award for Best Pop New Artist for There You Go. She was also nominated for an MTV VMA for Best New Artist alongside Christina Aguilera. They both lost to Macy Gray.
Wow.
Before we wrap up the year 2000, shall we check in on our other friend?
Oh, our good friend VC.
The VC. Now, Vitamin C released the first single from her second album, More, in November 2000. So just before everyone's packing up for Christmas, taking their leave and whatnot, she just slid in there with The Itch.
I need something inside that you can provide me.
I think this is probably her best single.
I mean, Joel, I was so obsessed with this when it came out. I think this was me reaching my peak Vitamin C fandom.
This is like graduation, Friends Forever is gone and like on a drunk night out and had a one night stand.
You don't have to whisper it. This is, I mean, she's horny on this single.
She is.
That's what the itch is. She's got the, you know.
She's got the itch again.
She's got the urge, yeah.
Unless the itch is more,
you know.
She had the one night stand and that's what's left, the itch.
We've got lotions
There's
for that.
There's a cream for that.
There's a cream for that, VC.
So I do think it's a great start to a new era for VC, this single. And the music video, I found quite similar to the Irresistible music video.
Oh, yes. Dark CGI.
Yeah, and
futuristic.
That whole kind of, the vibe. And it features the cast of Get Over It, because even though the songs are not featured in the film, I'm guessing it was kind of used as like the single for the film as well. So it has Kirsten Dunst and Mila Kunis in this.
Kirsten Dunst is featured quite a lot in it.
Yeah.
I don't quite understand the plot. I mean, I've watched this video about a million times.
I don't understand the plot, but Kirsten Dunst was taking it very seriously.
Yeah. Have I told you I used to cut out like interviews from like Smash Hits magazine or like People magazine and all that, and glue it into my school diary? Album reviews, single reviews, like the weekly charts, I used to cut that out. If like Brandy had debuted in the UK top 10, I would cut that out and paste it in my diary. I had a separate scrapbook just for the VC.
It's all coming out now.
And I think I must have every single press clipping she ever did in Australia.
You were doing OPR for free. You were doing the roundup for free. So what was it about the VC that made you, over a place of real curiosity? Great. I mean, you know me, there's random people that I stan and do similar things. But what is it about Colleen that made you think, I'm going to do a notebook, scrapbook dedicated just to her?
I don't know. I like that it was my thing. Yeah. You know, when you're a teenager, you're trying to find your lane. All the girls loved Britney. All the girls loved NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. And I didn't want to be like them. So I was like, okay, I'm going to find a pop star that no one really stands for. It's going to be my thing. Around this time when The Itch came out, she did lots of promo that also mentioned Dracula 2000, which was coming out before the end of 2000. So I was like living for this fantasy of, oh, this is a new era of VC. You know, her music's a bit sexier. She's a bit darker, edgier. She's going to be in Dracula. It was just everything.
Everything and more. So she was doing something right, because it peaked at number 6 in Australia, this song.
That was probably me telling all my friends. Hit,
yeah, by this single. Which, luckily, because you're ripping out all her promo from other places, so people still found out about it, thank God. Number 34 in New Zealand. Number 45 on the Billboard Hot 100. That's great. 26 on the Top 40 Mainstream Chart. 16 in Canada.
Now, in the US, it made number 5 on the physical singles chart. The Itch, the single, had Graduation, Friends Forever as a B-side. Now, Dracula 2000, we never managed to set a time to sit down and watch it.
No, we should still sit down and watch it, though. This is definitely the kind of movie I'm here for. Mm. Like, there's also a lot of, like, people that appear in hot as, like, people in their mid-20s, early 30s that are playing, like, hot teens in other films, but they're playing, like, semi-serious roles here. And you're just like, this is fantastic.
Even though I've not watched this movie, I'm aware that there is a scene in this movie of Vitamin C's character, Lucy. Now, she works in a Virgin megastore.
Oh.
And in this shot, in the background, is a Vitamin C album.
Artistic choice.
Subtle product placement. Mm. Now, let's quickly move on to one of my favourite albums of the noughties, Vitamin C's More, which came out in 2001.
Do you go from The Itch, which is the great start to a new era, for track 2, Sex Has Come Between Us? It's like, VC, it's just 2 on the nose. Sex has come between us. I mean, they are all catchy. It's beautiful and strange. It's 2 on the nose to be fabulous. That was then, this is now. Part of that song at the very beginning also sounds like Graduation, Friends Forever. Very similar.
Every time I hear it, like from the opening bars of that guitar, it just takes me back to the Glen Waverley train station where I used to catch the train to go into the city. And I would just listen to it, like, you know, as the sun is setting on a long summer's day, it just takes me back to that very specific time. Just my teenage years. Yeah. Now, I thought you would quite enjoy some of the album tracks on here, Joel.
I'm not done.
I love that you're on this journey with me on this VC album. It actually makes me feel less lonely in this world.
So, Dangerous Girl.
Oh, I love it.
You are my hip-hopper.
You are my heart-stopper.
And, like, is the other lyric... Does she say Fat Daddy something? Or something like that in it? Like... Did you watch that clip I sent you from the very Brady sequel where she goes, hip-hop sounds like something a rabbit listens to. That's what makes me think of that. You are my hip-hopper. It's just bonkers. Now, the audacity of her doing a cover of I Know What Boys Like, it's got an Aaron Carter vibe to it.
Oh, yeah, this is a very Aaron Carter kind of production, you know, very spiky. And it was meant to be the third single of the album before she got dropped, no. So... Poor VC.
I can't say no. Now, I have a real issue with this song. It's such a shame because this could have been the bop of her career. I cannot sit here and praise a song that has lyrics that are, when a guy wants a kiss, who am I to resist?
When the chocolates go round, I do more than just I.
One more glass of champagne, who am I to complain? Like, she cannot sing a song that's saying, when a guy wants a kiss, who am I to resist? She is singing that someone can... force themselves on her. And I can't get behind that.
I think you're reading it in a different way. As a teenager, when I was listening to it, I was like, oh yeah. I can't resist the boys either. But nobody knows.
Nobody knows. Subtle.
Busted and I Can't Say No were produced by Bloodshine Avant, who at this point had worked with, or is about to work with, Samantha Mumba, did Christina Milian, AM to PM. So, you know, this is exciting stuff. You know, we got some electric guitars thrown in there with hip-hop beats and electro-pop. I think if more of the album had been done with Bloodshine Avant, we could have had a, you know, really cool result.
Bops o'clock.
Yeah, definitely.
VC does bops.
Exactly. And would have sat quite well with The Itch as well. But I guess, you know, the lyrics are a little bit naff here and there, but...
Don't get me wrong, this is a much more enjoyable album to listen to than the first one.
Mm-hmm. Look, this isn't going to be everyone's teen pop album, per se, but if you're a fan of music of that sort, or even if you're just curious about just to see what the production's like, this is a good snapshot of that era,
yeah.
I think.
And then obviously, in an Australian bonus track, you got Smile and Graduation as well. So.
Which made it... I mean, that was value for money right there. So I bought the CD... album, and I remember going through the booklet, and it pulls out as a full poster actually on the inside, and you get this. So what you're seeing on the cover, you know, you're seeing her shoulder. She's actually topless.
They say
this is a real image shake-up for the VC.
She doesn't really look like her on the face of that cover that much, does she?
Yeah, because it's so dark and shadowy, and you know, you've got the kind of disco lights sort of streaming down on her naked shoulder, and she's giving you that sultry over-the-shoulder look with her feathered hair.
So this album was a real special album for you.
It was so special for me, and I just enjoyed all the different musical styles that she was doing.
Yeah, I'm sorry I couldn't take on Wholeheartedly with Love an album that is really special to you.
It's such a shame. I feel like we came so close to winning your adoration, but...
The album peaked at number 25 in Australia, 40 in New Zealand, and 122.
On the Billboard 200. Yikes. So, 29 on Billboard 200, that was Vitamin C's first album. This one, not even in the top 100. I think Elektra Records were a little bit worried.
Yeah.
So, what they did quite hastily is release one more single with virtually no promo whatsoever. They put out this really schmaltzy, sweet ballad called As Long As You're Loving Me.
Mm.
The single sadly didn't chart. It only made number 45 in New Zealand. But I remember being so obsessed with it.
Oh.
Because I didn't buy Graduation, Friends Forever, The Itch, or Smile on CD single. The minute I saw As Long As You're Loving Me, I was like, I need to get this.
You need to help your girl out.
Yeah, I need to help my girl out.
But you know what? You got to look at it, things like, you knew, you did what you needed to do as a fan. As long as you love me.
So, because my parents were concerned with how obsessed I was with pop music at this time, my parents thought it was getting in the way of my studies. They made me throw out my CDs.
That is heartbreaking.
So I don't have this copy of VCs As Long As You're Loving Me anymore.
But you managed to keep the album.
I hid the album. I can't remember what else went in the bin, but...
Goodbye went in it.
Goodbye by the Spice Girls went in it, and thank you for buying me a copy.
When you told me that story, I had to. It literally broke my heart, you told me that story the first time.
Parents, yeah, they were just worried that I was taking over my life. Pop music. And look at where I am now!
It's literally like, if I bump into people that I'm not in contact with anymore, they're like, oh, what are you up to now? And I'm like, doing a podcast about pop music, noughties pop music. Oh, right, not much has changed then.
So that's that for Vitamin C for now. We'll check in with her towards the end of our podcast one last time.
One last time, which was so interesting.
But for now, we're on the cusp of Pink going absolutely batshit huge.
Monumental.
Monumental. I mean, this is a landmark moment in our time and for this decade. We are, of course, talking about March 2001 when Lady Marmalade came out.
So without me realising, this must have been my first clocking of Pink. I had no idea this was before Get the Party Started.
The minute they said there was a single with Christina, Pink, Lil' Kim, Maya, produced by Missy Elliott, I was like, I know what the fuck this is about. I knew it was meant for me. This had me written all over it.
It was meant for all of us. It was meant for a generation of gay men.
Yeah. Which one were you? I think I know the answer. But come on.
I actually sang this very recently at karaoke. My friend Jess, who's part of Bosch and Bab, she runs a camp karaoke night called Round to Rita's.
I need to come.
And you do need to come. You're invited every time, David. Get yourself down to it if you're in London. It's on twice a month. Very fun, free camp, very theatrical. A lot of musical theatre songs, karaoke night. But there'll also be things like Lady Marmalade. And she roped me into being Maya, I think. Bryn was like Christina or something.
This is Bryn Christopher.
Yeah, who's a claimed singer-songwriter.
Charting artist.
Yeah. Maya was a little bit more attainable for me. So I did it, but I sold it like I was Christina.
Oh, yeah. Of course you would. I knew you would.
Most of the nights being Insta-storied and stuff. So Jess said she was in bed the next morning going through the Insta-stories. And her boyfriend, Michael, who's from New Girls, was like... Jaws got a cracking voice, like. So there was a really fascinating story about this on the Pink Behind the Music documentary with Ron Fair and Christina Aguilera. They're having the initial meeting about the song. Christina walks in with Ron Fair, head of her label, who I think I actually know Ron Fair most from Search for the Next Pussycat Doll.
Yeah, because we talked about Ron Fair a lot in our Pussycat Dolls episode.
Yeah. He didn't introduce himself to anyone, not to Pink, to no one. And he just goes, what's the bit that shows off the vocals the most? Christina will be singing that. And then she goes, "Hi, I'm Pink. Nice for you to introduce yourself." And no effing way is she doing that. That's what this meeting's about. Thank you very much. And it's just like, she is a rock star. You know, good feet. Like, you got to just admire her for standing her ground. Yeah, because none of us should be taking people's shit. Like,
yeah, there is a gutsiness to Pink that is not just like a constructed persona. Pink really is, you know, no nonsense, keeps it real. And that's the reason why it's worked so well for her. Yeah. And she's got such a long career in the business. You know, she stands her ground, but also does it respectfully.
Yeah, talent to back it up and does it for artist integrity, not...
an ego boost.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I think everyone was pretty nervous about getting the four of us together, but we proved them wrong. We get along.
But once we got in there and seen how it was coming about and how good the record was sounding, I think everything just flew easily.
I mean, this single took everyone's careers to new heights, especially Pink, you know, who, like you said, sort of became your, unknowingly, your introduction into her. Yeah. US, it was number one for 5 weeks.
Mental.
Sold over 5 million copies, holds the record for longest reigning number one on the mainstream top 40 chart for an all-female collaboration. Number one in the UK and Australia. In the UK, it was the 14th biggest seller of 2001.
Wow.
Won a Grammy in 2002 for Best Pop Collaboration with Vocals. Won Video of the Year at the VMA. And Best Video in a Film.
If you could win one or the other, would you rather win a VMA or a Grammy?
A Grammy. Come on.
No, I know a Grammy is so much more prestigious.
Yeah,
but...
of course. You can see you're a Grammy winning artist. That carries more weight than a VMA winning artist.
I want a Teen Choice Awards. Teen Choice Awards and the Academy Awards. No one would see that coming.
Oh, that has to be done. So, next comes... Now, this is where it gets really interesting and really mega for Pink. We're in October 2001, so, what, more than 6 months after Lady Marmalade
comes out. Yeah, quite a break. We might have started seeing initial teasers of the single maybe 2 months before October, though.
This is
a time when... people would do a lot of promo before.
Long leads, yeah, with radio and everything. So true, true, true. Get the Party Started is a classic quintessential Y2K party record, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, I love that it has that little bit of nod to the 90s. You know, you've got that kind of hip-hop beat from the 90s with a kind of really new wave kind of production through it. Joel, I have to point out, in research for this, I saw on Wikipedia the Enemy review, which really tickled me.
What does it say?
It says the song displays the kind of clod-hopping attention-seeking that makes you assume you were listening to a Jerry Halliwell record.
Bloody cheek.
Can you imagine Get the Party Started as a Jerry single?
Do you know what? Get this party started on a Saturday night, yeah!
Joel, did you know that this song was originally written for Madonna?
No.
So after Lady Marmalade, Pink was having a moment where she was feeling really pigeonholed into this whole pop, R&B, pop star thing. She wasn't liking how it was becoming a little bit more staged and manufactured than what she would like. So she decided to seek out Linda Perry.
That's amazing.
So she is a huge Four Non Blondes fan. Like, she sings that song... What's their signature song called? What's Going On?
Yeah.
So she sings that. She's been singing that since she was a kid. Like, she loves Four Non Blondes. But she literally has no idea what happened to Linda Perry, her idol. So she tracked this woman down. Turns out Linda's been writing behind the scenes for other artists. But I don't think she had, like, a big signature hit as a songwriter as yet. Until she met Pink. So Pink left her multiple voicemail messages... wanting to meet up, and Linda Perry just looked her up real quick and go, because she didn't know who Pink was, looked her up and go, oh, she's looking a bit too bling bling. I don't think, she said, I think you've got the wrong Linda Perry. So she sort of rebuffed Pink initially, but Pink just kept persisting. She's like, if you don't meet up with me, I will come find you.
Is there another Linda Perry? No.
No, stop playing games, Linda. So she finally calls, tracks down Linda, talks to her, and says, I want to work together. And then Linda goes, ah, actually, I happen to have a song that I wrote last week that Madonna rejected. And that was Get the Party Started.
Wow, that's incredible. And because that would have been like for the music era Madonna, right? She's like, get the party started. I've started the party in fucking 20 years ago and it's still bloody going because I'm Madonna.
Yeah. Anyway, it was perfect for Pink. It was full of energy. It was just what we needed, you know, just kind of bridge the gap before what was to come, right?
Because you're seeing Pink's personality in the music video. She's starting to be in this kind of rocky, cheeky edge of
fun
and...
Because actually, if you think about it, her three singles before were all really like sassy, full of attitude, tough girl. But this one's more like, I'm the life of the party. And it was more inviting. It's like, you know, you can be part of my game. Yeah. We can hang out as well. So it's quite a different tone. I love that she was sort of playing with the kind of image switch up at this time as well. You know, that scene where she's trying on different outfits, getting ready to go out. It's sort of like, oh, you know, which Pink are you going to get? You know, I can look like this, I can look like that.
Yeah.
I mean, in a lot of ways, this is the sister video to Christina Milian's AM to PM.
Oh.
But without showing the ID at the door.
Yeah, she didn't need it.
She just fucking barged in anyway. Yeah.
And this song was huge. It's really probably her defining song.
One off, yeah. Okay, so Get the Party Started. Made number 4 on the US Hot 100, number 1 on the Dance Club charts, which I think is Pink's first time hitting the top of that chart.
Number 1 in Australia.
Oh, we loved it.
Number 2 in the UK.
Obsessed.
Where did it go in New Zealand?
Surely number one. Yeah.
They loved it.
The single also won the 2002 MTV VMA for Best Female Video and Best Dance Video. It won the 2002 Europe Music Award for Best Song. And she also picked up a Q Award for Best Video.
Get it, girl.
Yeah, crossing into that alternative rock press kind of world. Like, this transition, turning Pink from R&B to pop rock stars, handled really well. Yeah. It's a very slick operation.
So L.A. Reid did not want her to do this move.
Correct.
But, you know... Mm-hmm. He gave her the opportunity to fail.
And that was his words to her, wasn't it?
It was his words. You know, it wasn't like, okay, go for it, we'll see what happens. It was, I'm going to give you the opportunity to fail.
Prove me wrong. Which, of course, for someone like Pink, that's like...
Challenge accepted.
Yeah.
And she got the last laugh.
She definitely got the fucking last laugh. November 2001, Misunderstood, the second album by Pink, comes out. Now, this is a real career-defining moment.
And also very just defining of this era of music, and especially the pop rock genre. This album was on heavy rotation in my upbringing. It's a very... I've recently re-listened to it again, not even just for this podcast. Sometimes in the past year, if I've been, like, pissed off at work, I'll put this album on. I just feel like if people aren't getting me, or, like, I sit there and I'm just like, I'm just misunderstood, like Pink put on the album. and it's literally that level of patheticness, but it makes me feel really happy.
It makes you feel understood. It
makes me feel understood. This album is really, it really does take me back to, how old was I? 10? Literally 10. It takes me back to being 10 years old when we'd have to, like, see my dad or go round his, or if he was taking us out for dinner or something. This would be the CD that was put on in the car quite a lot.
Because it works for everyone.
Yeah. And so it Joel, makes
this
me...
is the first time I've heard you even imply that you didn't have total dominance of the CD in a car. Because almost every episode we've done, you've been like, I would get the new CD, I put it in my dad's car, and we'll keep repeating track one.
There would be a few times, can you let someone else have a go? And it's like, okay. Also, my dad's girlfriend, now wife, who we secretly married without telling anyone, spilling the tea here. She always used to ask me to copy the CD for her because she really liked it. Because she knew that I liked making CDs. She was like, I'll buy a box of CDs. Would you copy me the album and you can keep the rest of the CDs? I was like, I'll do it for the CDs and a fiver. she was like, no, I'm not doing it. So she never got a copy of the CD, mate.
Oh.
I'm not doing her favours. I don't need to go out my way to do her a favour.
I love that you just like held that over.
I was
her
a
head.
Real cheeky little shit. I could be when I was younger anyway. So yeah, she used to always ask me and I was like, you know the deal.
I think Pink would have been proud of you
Pink
for doing
would
that.
Be proud of that.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It's a good album that has moments of being fucking excellent.
Oh yeah. It was so well done. It was so consistent. It was a real coming of age moment for Pink, you know, because she was starting to, she got really personal on this album, you know, talking about the drug abuse that she went through younger, talking about her parents splitting up. It's real raw stuff, but also really fun.
It's not like some stuff where you look at it and be like, oh, it was so relatable at the time and it's so fake, but it's like, this is so genuine.
Definitely.
And it was just her really telling her story.
And vocally, she sounds incredible. I remember, like, noticing this transition to a more rockier sound and thinking, gosh, this really suits Pink. I can't imagine a time where she didn't make records that sounded like this. As great as most girls are, as great as the R&B album was, like, this just felt, wow. Like, yeah. Her voice really came alive.
She's rewritten history for herself. So it takes people a real moment to go, oh, gosh. Or some of us didn't even know.
Yeah, exactly. One of my favourites on the album is Respect.
Yeah.
Which, listening to it now in 2019 ears, I'm like, it could have been a little mixed single.
It's just great that she's so early in her career going so personal and singing about things that we just don't really see from a young mainstream pop female star.
You know, she did kick off the kind of more confessional side of all the pop girls that came up around her, right? Because then after this was Christina Aguilera's Stripped project. And, you know, she worked with Linda Perry for that as well.
Controversially, so we're finding out from that. Well, Pink felt like she was cheating on her a bit, Linda Perry. Because, yeah, you would not have Beautiful without Linda the Misunderstood
Perry.
Album.
Yeah, true. And without Linda Perry coming to be the of hot course. Songwriter that everyone wanted. Yeah.
And then, you know, then it furthered out to our other pop rock girls, you know, Ashley Simpson singing Shadow and... Lindsay with Confessions, Daughter to Father.
Yeah. So he sort of set the tone that, hey, we can be vulnerable and still have a huge fucking hit on our hands. It's sort of, I'm not saying she made vulnerability popular, but maybe she did.
Honesty.
Yeah, maybe it was a time where people were starting to get sick of the more sugary, highly manufactured, glossy pop acts and they wanted something a bit more relatable, a bit more real.
So, the chart positions, like, literally, the year-end charts in the UK for 2002, this was number two. Year-end charts.
Second biggest-selling album here.
And then in the decade-end charts of the UK, it was 37. Decade. And 38 in the US.
Wow.
So, yeah, this album, 14 in Australia.
This is her only album to not go top 10 there, but still four times platinum in Australia.
Number one in Ireland. 24 in Italy. What are you thinking, guys? Number 2 in the UK.
Respectably, certified 6 times platinum, selling over 1.9 million copies here alone. And in the US, it debuted at number 8 on the Billboard 200. 8 weeks later, reached a peak of number 6. Sold over 5.6 million copies there alone, 5 times platinum. It became the second biggest selling album by a female artist in 2002. Behind Avril Lavigne. So the Misunderstood album sold 13 million copies worldwide. And, I mean, it signalled the start of a huge global domination for Pink, who now has sold over 90 million records. Fuck me.
And she went on the party tour for the album.
Her first headline concert tour.
And then she also, at this time, which is crazy, she also served as an opening act for NSYNC.
They've had very many. Britney.
Mandy.
Jessica?
No. She did 98 Degrees.
Oh, different league altogether.
Jessica did a headlining tour of the Irresistible album.
We never have to do a Jessica Ann episode if we just cobble together everything.
Just do a compilation for the Jessica episode.
Because I'm still dragging my feet about doing a Jessica episode.
We'll do a Jessica episode. It's happening.
Oh, he said that now.
It's happening.
He said it on the record.
Not this series, but it's happening.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
It's got to.
I mean, I think we've already done it.
I've had to do VC, so we're doing Jessica fucking Ann.
Okay, now, can we move on to Pink?
Yes, so, what was the second single, Don't Let Me Get Me?
Yeah, December 2001.
Now, I think this is my favourite single of this era. Doctor, doctor, won't you please prescribe me something? A day in the life of someone else, 'cause I'm a hazard to myself. Get the Party Started was an incredible hit that was so much fun, but this is more the message of this era.
Mm-hmm.
LA told me you'll be a pop star. All you have to change is everything you are.
And she even got an LA Reid lookalike music video and had like this whole presentation board.
And then that makes us all feel really relatable to it. And then she's saying, tired of being compared to damn Britney Spears. She's so pretty, that just ain't me. So quickly saying, I'm not doing a dig here, to make us all feel like, yeah, none of us could ever be as beautiful as her. We get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so many layers. There's that, like, surface, and then it's so much deeper than that, obviously, mm-hmm. and so much more relatable. But in a way, if it can just, it's a very clever that it can tick so many boxes.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time we've heard her becoming more personal. Mm. And really just speaking for herself, you know, not hiding behind this tough girl persona or whatnot.
I love the narrative of this music video because there's that whole scene where she's trying to be made into that perfect pop star and she's having none of it. I love that she's got her own version of the Feitosa dreads at the end of the music video. Love it.
You know what I love about this era is that we're seeing lots of different hair colours and hairstyles from Pink. And the pink colour is somehow featured in very subtle ways.
Has to be.
Mm, it's part of the brand. Don't Let Me Get Me made number 8 on the US Billboard Hot 100, number 1 on the mainstream Top 40, number 6 in the UK, number 8 in Australia. Not bad for a single that came out at the end of the year. And then in June 2002, we get Just Like a Pill, the third single. Now, oh, I remember when this came out. This was actually probably the first time I'd heard of morphine. I mean, certainly wouldn't have heard it in a song before. I can't stay on your morphine, 'cause it's making me itch. I said I'd try to call the nurse again, but she's been a little bitch. I think I'll get out of here, where I can run just as fast as I get, to the middle of nowhere, to the middle of my frustrated fears. And I swear, you're just like a pill, instead of making me better, you keep making me ill, you keep making me ill. I remember looking at this video and thinking, wow.
She's got dark hair.
Drugs can fuck you up. Is this the same girl we saw in There You Go / Most Girls? In such a short time in her career, like we're talking, what, maybe 2 years?
2 years max, yeah.
Yeah. What a journey her music, like just even looking at her music videos, what an evolution her image has taken. It's very gothic, but very fantasy-like.
So the charts of this song?
Just Like a Pill, made number 8 in the US, number 1 in the UK. Now, this is her first solo number 1 over here.
Amazing.
It is amazing that this was a number 1 single here. And in Australia, it didn't chart because it's a radio-only single for us. It was number 1 on our airplay charts over there. I definitely saw the music videos everywhere, but it didn't occur to me that there wasn't a CD single.
It's great that she's still getting a number 1 here, her first number 1. So long after the album's come out as well.
Okay, so now we're getting on to the last single of this monumental Pink album. And this one just breaks my heart.
Oh, yeah. No pop stars were doing anything like this at the time. Or since, really.
Yeah, it's... So December 2002, just as we're all getting into Christmas, getting cheery, Pink comes out with Family Portrait. It's hard to listen to me, because I'm sure it's the same for you as well. I grew up and my family, you know, my parents fought all the time. So even back then when this single first came out, listening to it, I was like, I never heard anyone articulate these feelings like this before so directly. She's singing everything I'm going through. It's so insane.
Yeah, absolutely. And that video is heartbreaking of Pink and the little girl.
The little girl that is a little version of her, right?
Yeah. But then when at the end of the video, the little girl goes into the TV and then adult Pink's just there all on her own.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
And you're hearing her voice in a whole new way. The hurt. Oh, yeah.
The vulnerability.
Yeah. She is such a fucking great singer. Such a great vocalist.
It's not necessarily radio ready, but everyone really got behind it, I would say.
So yeah, literally fourth and final single. And in the US, it's another top 20 hit for her. Number 18 there. Number 11 in the UK. Number 11 in Australia. Like, this is... And also more to the point, Family Portrait was a huge artistic statement for Pink. You know, it shows that she can take risks. She can get really autobiographical. She can get really raw. There is real substance.
And that ends that era.
And that ends our coverage with Pink, our journey with her through her first two albums. But before we leave you guys, go and check in on our friend, the VC, because she had one last little effort from her.
Which is a really unique, interesting move.
So what happened is, after her album didn't do as well, after More didn't do as well, Elektra Records dropped her. And the VC signed with Richard Branson's V2 Records, exclusively here in the UK.
Here in the UK, where she's never had a charting single.
Never. Ireland, yes, but not in the UK.
No.
So I remember the time I read about this in the news, I was like, oh, V2, Liberty X signed with V2 as well. So I was like, okay, maybe, you know, V2 is the label.
The new hot pop label.
Yeah, exactly. So in July 2003, Vitamin C came out with her cover / mashup of Last Night by The Strokes, which she mixed with Blondie's Heart of Glass.
I heard it for the first time today. I watched the music video. I thought it was really cool. I did think it was really cool. It's actually the most enjoyable of all her singles.
Mm-hmm.
But just what a great, what a really bonkers move. Somewhere where she's completely unknown and like with hopes for her to break the music scene here.
I don't know. I think it's exciting for her because she's been Vitamin C internationally. You know, Vitamin C with The Doll, with Dracula 2000, with Graduation Friends Forever. And here she could sort of reinvent herself as this kind of edgy indie electro artist, Vitamin C. You know, if she picks up credibility over here, it could feed to the world as well. So I sort of see, I mean, it's a bold move.
Yeah.
Using that name that's already, you know, people know about. And just sort of reinvent herself on this side of the pond. But sadly, the single didn't do too well in the UK. Number 70.
Number 70, which makes it her only chart entry here in the UK.
Mm-mm.
For a song that was meant to launch her here in the UK, it's the first time I'm ever hearing about it.
I mean, was there a Pop World performance? Where was the Top of the Pops gig?
No, none of it.
Yeah, where was the cover of NME?
What, like, make some phone calls, Rich, you know?
I struggled to find any promo for this in this era. And amazingly, according to Wikipedia, they had a whole album lined up ready to come out a month after. Really? Sadly, never saw any promo copies, no track listing leaked, nothing. Well, VC, if you've got the masters...
Get them out there.
Yeah, I mean, with your coin in the job you have now, I'm sure you can buy the rights out and buy the masters back if you don't own it. We'd love to hear this album.
So before we leave VC completely, unintentionally, my whole way into VC is... She has a cover of Volare on the Lizzie McGuire movie soundtrack in 2003. Now, that is a CD I had on high rotation in my life and in my dad's car. So I'd be singing along to that like there's no tomorrow. No idea it was VC. Well, halfway around the world, other side of the world, you're standing VC over there.
Yeah.
The
way we can leave all the shadows behind now.
And then she pops up on Disney Mania 3 and a soundtrack in 2005 as well.
Oh, shit.
So she still had sort of stuff going on. They're probably songs that were recorded.
And she just had in her vault.
And they used them.
Yeah. After her pop star career ended, VC went behind the scenes, started writing more music for other artists. 2005, she wrote a song for Emma Roberts called We Are Gonna Happen. And it's the soundtrack for Unfabulous, which was the Emma Roberts TV show. She put together a Radio Disney-aimed pop group called The Truth Squad. Don't know what the fuck happened there. That was in 2006. 2007, she assembled and produced a girl group called The Stunners. Now, in this girl group is Tinashe.
Queen.
Hayley Kiyoko.
My queen. She's the standout star of that girl band.
And a couple, and like two other girls. Now, the Stunners supported Justin Bieber on tour. They had a song on the iCarly soundtrack.
Yeah, they were like bubbling up and building up to happen. So was she managing this band as well?
I don't know if she was managing, but she certainly put them together and, you know, got them on their way.
Wow.
So the VC brought Tinashe and Hayley Kiyoko into the world. 2009, Vitamin C wrote Let's Get Crazy for Hannah Montana.
Which is one of my favourite Hannah Montana songs.
You see, like, all these, like, you were like, oh, her songwriting, the lyrics, no. And then, like, her work pops up via Hannah Montana. It's like, my favourite song.
It is. It's still, I still put it on playlists to this day sometimes.
She also wrote the Demi Lovato and Selena Gomez duet, One and the Same. Oh,
that is such a classic. So she did also have a song on the On the Line soundtrack. On the Line was the Joey Fatone, Lance Bass movie from the year 2000.
Oh, no.
And then in that, there was the On the Line All-Stars, which we must have spoken about on the Mandy Moore episode.
So, yeah.
But so she had, did have a song on that soundtrack. So any other...
She's just popping up here and there and everywhere. And one of my favourite artists, Winter Gordon, a.k.a. now Diana Gordon, her single Till Death was co-written with Colleen Ann Fitzpatrick.
Well done, Colleen.
So when I had a chance to interview Winter Gordon one of the many times back on Australian radio, I said, you wrote this with Vitamin C. And she's like, yeah, Colleen's really cool. She's just the loveliest woman. I was like, it's like literally Winter Gordon's like another of one of my faves that I love to like stan about that no one really is with me on. Two of my niche favourites have somehow gotten together to create this absolute banger. Like, in what world is it possible?
In this world, David.
It blew my fucking mind.
She did at one point tease, in about 2007, she teased having a comeback. She said she had an album in the works that she described as Goldfrapp meets Vitamin C.
Here for it.
Which she'd hoped to have out in 2007, but...
She was busy with the Stunners by then.
Yeah, it never came out. Maybe some of that work ended up being used for the Stunners.
Maybe, yeah. And also, apparently, I read somewhere that she had a Children's World music album.
Mm.
Weird segue, weird career move, but hey,
Rachel Stevens did it.
A children's album, so you know, you never know. But yeah, 2012, stepped up as vice president of music at Nickelodeon. She oversees A&R's, management of the Nickelodeon artists. This woman knows the industry. Like, you are the VC on your team.
I'm available for a meeting, V. Get me in.
I think that brings us to the end of our journey with these two pop rebels.
It's been really fun. It's, even though I know I've not been overly positive on VC's work, it's been really fun and a real treat to explore it all. So thank you for letting me into that world, David. And it's been a real absolute treat to look back at Pink's first two albums as well.
Mm.
Obviously, we've not done it. We all know where Pink is now and what she's up to.
Oh, yeah.
She has a new album coming out, so let's make sure we all check that out. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening. As you already know, we're at Right Back Pod on all socials. We do love you guys following us, commenting, interacting with us on Instagram and Twitter and whatnot. If you've really enjoyed our podcast, if you're enjoying it, please do share with your friends. And if you can, leave us a little 5-star review. If you're a big VC stan like David, let us know. I would love to hear about that.
It'd be so nice to not be alone in this world.
If you want to follow me on socials, I'm at Dr_Joelby on everything.
I'm at FeedLimmy on Twitter and at LoveLimmy on Instagram. I might just rename it to Vitamin C Fan Account.
Vitamin C Stan 7.
Yeah.
All right, kiddos. Well, we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Because I really need to know what to do.